October 21st, 2015 is the RYSG, and this session will run 9:15 to 10:30 a.m. local.
Good morning, everyone. This is being done for remote participation as well, so for those of you here in Dublin, welcome, and for those of you who are joining us from wherever you may be, welcome to the first live DNA University session. Today we're going to be doing a wonderful panel session with some registrars here. Absolutely invite the audience to participate, ask questions. We're going to try and, as we do with the DNA University, provide some insight at a really commercial level for folks as to being in the registrar world, and indeed for the TLD operators in the room, you know, how you can work better with registrars. So quick introduction, my name is Tony Kirsch. I lead the TLD advisory business for Newstar, and because of those sins, I've been given the most recognised title in the world, which is the Dean of the DNA University, which sounds embarrassing, isn't it? So we've got some great speakers today. I'm going to get those guys to come up now, if you don't mind, and we'll introduce you. But as I said, lots of questions today. The DNA, for those of you that are not across it, really a fantastic group that started, you know, roughly 1 or 2 years ago to try and bring the commercial industry element, you know, to the world. And we've got a great board of people, some great supporters. So if you're not a member, please look us up, thedna.org, and get involved in it. Today's session, as I said, is about the DNA University. It's the education arm of that. We've done two previous webinars, and we'll continue to do more to provide education to the industry. And then you'll see that come through in a variety of more webinars. And we're going to start to introduce more and more concepts of interviews, panel meetings, and so on, to try and build. So that's enough from me. We've got some great speakers here today, and we're going to ask them to introduce themselves, and we're going to talk very much today about what's happening in the real world from the registrar's perspective. So welcome. Great.
Harvey with web.com. I have responsibility for network solutions, as well as our web.com retail properties. And certainly happy to answer any questions I can answer.
Morning. My name is Tommy Ho. I manage the CCTLD Registry Partnerships at GoDaddy. I've been with the company for about 2 years, and it's good to be here.
Hey there. Nick from Name.com. I manage new TLDs at Name.com.
Matt Sorlin at Mark Monitor. I run client services and operations. I've been in the industry about 13 years.
I'm also claiming 13 years. I'm Simon Cousins. I'm the founder and CEO of Allegra Vita. We're a leading China-based consultancy taking mostly new gTLDs into China. We have quite a substantial number of registries and TLDs. And so as we don't have any Chinese registrars on the panel today, I'm representing the point of view of the many Chinese registrars that we work with on a daily basis in China.
Fantastic. So as you can see, folks, and this is no accident, you've got the range of the registrar market here. Obviously, you've got sort of the Chinese experience of Simon, the detailed corporate experience of Matt, and then really three of the guys in the world that are out there, you know, selling a lot of your products. So feel free, as I said, to ask questions, get involved in today's session. Drake, I'm going to start with you. Your experience, so I wanted to sort of set today's framework almost in 20-minute size pieces. The first part being, what are you seeing today, challenges? The second being, what you see, the options of what you would like to see in the future. And then the third part would just be a bit of, you know, really stargazing as to where the industry's heading. So in terms of today, you know, from your experience, I'm not going to worry so much about onboarding TLDs. I think we're mostly through a lot of that. But in terms of, you know, at web.com at the moment, tell us about your interactions with TLD owners and registry operators, and in particular, things that are working and not working for you.
Things I think that are a little bit unique about web.com. For those that don't know, web not only operates network solutions and register, which primarily focus at retail registrations, but we also do a very large portfolio of business with small to mid-sized companies. Everything from hosting and DIY, which are you know, fairly products at this point, but also what we call our do-it products. You know, these are suites where customers can come. So we have exposure to a lot of small businesses that really don't know what they want when they come. And that, it gives us kind of a unique opportunity to help craft the message. One of the things that we're finding is very challenging about that is, how do we get into that conversation? I think it kind of breaks down into a couple of different pieces, and I won't get too far into the irrelevant pieces there. Certainly the last 18 months have been interesting, a lot of us. You know, we went from effectively carrying, you know, yeah, you know, products, if you will, within our storefront to well over 3. That has forced us to mature a lot of our operational, you know, not a bad thing, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of overhead. We've also taken an approach which we're not going to choose the winners and losers. size, and we like the market to kind of determine our going to be attractive to the customers. So our goal is to put the best product in front of the right customers. And that, though, there is a couple of challenges, and some things that we've seen and we continue to see is as TLDs are coming out, anything that has really heavy lift from an onboarding perspective, that could be with RA requirements, that could be with technical development requirements, that could be with things like specific trademark clearing. I'm not going to get into any specific examples, but from our perspective, it's not that we don't want to carry it, it's that financial decision as to whether the labor and the cost that employ it makes sense. You know, if we look at a current registry that we're integrated with today, and we're integrated most, or at least the back ends that support the reg out, it's not a very heavy lift exercise for us to onboard a TLD. It's a contract, it's a SKU in our system, you know, maybe a little. We have to do significant development work. You know, if you're you know, those type of things really force us to have a conversation internally about, frankly, we haven't seen any rocket ship TLDs out there believe that any specific argument is going to justify hundreds of hours of labor without a very significant conversation. So from our perspective, we're happy to have that conversation, but we have to have that conversation. So it's not a no-never, it's just not at the top of the list kind of a piece that we're finding a little bit challenging as we talk about our flagship products is that when we start talking about bundling, and one of the things that we do for our customers is bundling, they're not buying a lot of cases, they're buying a website or they're buying a professional ad. The pricing structures become very challenging. You know, if a typical comm, you know, let's just round it out at $8, you know, we can have that baked into our current financial models. If it renews at very similar terms, that's fine. You know, that makes sense in that way. Anytime we start to change that, it's not that it can't be handled. It just means that the echo, does that mean we have to change our packaging pricing? Does that mean we have to think about, you know, where, you know, those are the type of things that have to be. Again, I guess, you know, one piece of feedback I would give is that the closer to the .com pricing models, you know, would be a highly encouraged practice from our perspective because it moves a lot of barriers with our conversations. And I don't want to skip over the fact we're not discouraged it, and we're absolutely happy to have that conversation. Just understand.
An insight. Tommy, from GoDaddy's perspective, lots of different TLDs now. As Drake said, you know, pricing's one element, but how else are you seeing other TLDs differentiate themselves?
Yeah, just to echo what Drake said, I think those are great insights. You know, just in terms of what how TLDs are differentiating themselves, it's hard to say. I mean, there's certainly the specific requirements that that we're seeing from closed TLDs that have you know, that have a long you know, sort of that are not, I guess you want to call them that are not synchronous, that don't have registration immediately. Those represent a challenge, I think, for us. You know, customers expect to purchase a domain and then get their website immediately. And not having that benefit, it just means that there's extra messaging to the customers that we have to provide. I think the other, you know, I think the other thing about this, now that we're 18, 24 months into the process, we're certainly looking at renewals and how that's going to shape up. Another aspect that comes up is what we like to call change management, and how registries have begun to introduce changes, you know, just even if it's a slight change in their policy, in their pricing, and how we manage that. These are, you know, across the 380, 400, 500 TLDs that we've onboarded, it really represents a challenge for us overall. You know, the last thing I would probably say is that we're seeing a wide variance in promotional programs, in incentives, rebates, things like that, that registries are introducing. And that's really, while it's interesting, you know, it's not always easy to implement all of those programs, especially with the retail, kind of a retail price component that's required by some of these registries. So, you know, if there's one thing that I would recommend to our registry partners, certainly we welcome the opportunity to participate in these programs, but you know, the marketing aspect of it, the kind of the go-to-market aspect of it, if you could leave it to the registrars to kind of decide that aspect, that would be very helpful.
So, Nick, from your perspective at name.com, we're just talking here about a ever-expanding inventory of somewhat more inconsistent business models and indeed pricing and policy frameworks. What are the challenges that you've had to go through internally to sort of take the old world, which reasonably consistent, into now what is, you know, a rainbow of options?
That's definitely not a short answer. I think the registrar channel is catching up to this new world, right? I think you have a channel that's optimized to sell one TLD from a static set of TLDs, no bigger than 15 or 20, really, depending on the geo area. The new world is hundreds of TLDs, obviously. I think that as registrars develop, there's a couple of things that need to improve and a couple of things that we're working to improve. Number one being search, right? The search experience is fundamentally behind the times, most if not all registrars. It's behind the times in a couple of different ways. The biggest one being the suggestion engines are going to get a lot stronger. But even more than that, we need to encourage use in the flow, in the channel. And that's a little bit different than, I think, the straight upsell, right? If you go through some of our competitors outside the space, website builders or Squarespace or whoever, they're focusing on content first and then the domain second. Those are stickier registrations that really drive content and usage. And then finally, I think that the biggest thing that we're seeing is when this program launched, I think a lot of people anticipated people switching from one TLD to a new TLD or one TLD to a CCTLD or really changing their entire brand around a TLD. I don't think anyone who's a small business owner is really that keen to do that. I think the key that we need to push as an industry is that you don't need just one domain, right? We have to find ways to encourage usage for small businesses and large businesses across multiple TLDs, right? So there is room for people who are using multiple TLDs to really drive their business. And the more we get those examples out there, the more that we're going to grow this industry beyond just a single registry or a single registrar, right? We have to explain to people that it's your personal identity, it's your social identity, it's your, you know, it is so much more than a single TLD. And I think that fundamentally is the biggest challenge that we're facing right now.
Question, Nick. How do you encourage your consumers, your customers, your business customers to purchase more than one domain name for different aspects of their online identity? I mean, are you seeing some early successes with any strategies?
Yeah, so definitely. So I think that the biggest thing is to make it really, really easy, right? So I think that stuff like DNS records and name servers have to be gone for most registrars, right? It's got to be one click to add a connection to your Facebook or your social or your Twitter, right? So I think right there, there's three different domain names. And, you know, they can even redirect back to, you know, a com, right? But the point is that you have to, A, make it easy, and B, show use cases where it makes sense for people to actually be doing this. And the latter is definitely the hard part, right? I think that part is definitely still growing.
Matt, from a different perspective, I've got my own mic now. This is dangerous, right? Interrupt all the time. So, I mean, there'll be a lot of folks in here that are TLD operators, Matt, that... be interested in your view from taking, you know, the thousands of customers that you deal with at corporate side and offering now this new inventory, and what's their feedback? You know, they've already got a portfolio, there's extensive names, sometimes they feel like they don't necessarily need them all, and now we come in with the new shiny toys. Tell us about how they're feeling.
Well, this is where I become the least popular guy in the room, I suppose. I mean, just to pick up on what Nick was saying, you know, if you think it's tough and challenging for a small business to change their domain, think about a Fortune 500 company that's got advertising and billboards and letterhead and business cards. You know, I mean, my company, our parent corporation, has 55,000 employees. So just think about the cost of, you know, rebranding our business cards and printing that, right? So our customers are faced with not only, you know, all the new GTLDs, but we've got customers that applied for .brands as well, right? So you've got this interplay of, okay, what are we doing with our portfolio? You know, we have clients that have upwards of 50,000 domain names, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they have no business having that many domains, right? So for us, I mean, you know, we carry every, well, we try to carry every TLD that launches. So we're somewhere close to, you know, over 700, 750, something around that. Because we will have some client somewhere in the world that wants to register a dot something. So, you know, we don't really have the luxury of making decisions about what we're going to carry. But ultimately, you know, for us, we're the probably the least exciting registrar you guys will deal with, right? Like, I don't have to deal with marketing programs and promotions because we don't do that. Our clients don't want, you know, we take much more of an educational approach, right? So we tell our clients what's launching, what might be relevant to their business. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it's up for them to decide, you know, does this make sense? And we've seen some brand holders, you know, not only register, but start to use some new GTLDs and sort of test the waters. But again, you've got this dynamic of, you know, they're making decisions about not only what to register, but then maybe what to use, but then how they're going to play their .brand in as well. So, you know, from a corporate standpoint, you just got a lot, all the factors that you guys are dealing with the consumer in the mid-market, you've got it kind of just amped up that much more.
So as just further on that, so if I'm a TLD operator in the audience, how can I best enable you? I mean, the communication side of what you've got to deal with is complex in the first place. So how do I best enable you? And what are the methodologies that you're using to get those communications out? Because I dare say you've had a similar conversation a number of times in the last year. Like, there's a new something. You know, are they getting tired, or how do we freshen it up?
Yeah, they're definitely getting tired. I mean, like I said, it's not really a question of us carrying your TLD. I mean, 99% of the time we will. But what I always tell TLD operators is, like, if you expect us to make your TLD relevant, it's not going to work. What you guys need to do, and what's going to get brand holders interested in actually A, registering, and then B, using your TLD, is making it relevant to them. You know, making it relevant out in the marketplace. So, you know, when you get one company starting to do something, our clients will start to notice, they'll start to get interested in it. So that's how you do it. But it's really up to the TLD operator and other folks, you know, I mean, people like the mid-market folks to try to make TLDs relevant so that big brand holders will start to pay more attention to it.
So Simon, let's extrapolate this out now into China. You've got Chinese IDNs as top-level domains, as well as a range of new ASCII TLDs. Tell us about the Chinese registrars. How are they embracing this, and how are they dealing with this, you know, influx of new product?
Sure, Tony. I think as every registry operator in the world understands, there is a new regulatory regime in China. And in fact, it's a very old regime. It's everything old is new again. The regulatory regime really was set in place more than 10 years ago, but the government has just very recently decided to empower certain regulators to affect these changes. So it is necessary now for every new GTLD and legacy GTLD and CCTLD to achieve individual Ministry of Industry and Information Technology approval on a per TLD basis. So I think that there's a substantial amount of debate and education materials around the compliance in the Chinese regulators. So we should focus our conversation on the registrar channel. So all things being equal, if you're a registry operator which has gone through all of this area, and they're very clear steps, there's very little ambiguity to get your approval certificates. Say you've achieved your approval in China, and you're now able to be legally sold by Chinese registrars to Chinese registrants. I'd absolutely agree with Drake's perspective that you need to be thinking about bundling. It's a fact that a majority of domains that are sold across China, and we're talking about just China's mainland, not Hong Kong, not Taiwan, not Chinatown in New York City, the majority of Chinese mainland registrations are made as a bundle. So that's not to say that there aren't very large and influential and very well-run retail registrars in China. Two of the biggest are headquartered in Beijing, but the vast majority of domains that are sold as part of a bundle with hosting, web development, app development, and all of other services. The registrars, the typical registrars, aren't all that interested in investing in only domain name marketing programs because they're making a very small margin just on the domain name. There's a lot of downward pressure on pricing. They make fantastic money on web development services and hosting services. So you just have to understand that bundling is the standard method for presenting a domain name to the Chinese registrant. You also need to remember that Chinese registrants aren't teenagers, aren't mums and pops, aren't aunties, aren't enthusiasts. My 15-year-old daughter has a Tumblr blog, as I'm sure pretty much every 15-year-old daughter has. And of course, she's gone and bought her own domain name, which is connected to her Tumblr blog. But in China, 15-year-old daughters don't have Tumblrs. They don't blog. They don't do that kind of activity. There aren't really enthusiasts. So a vast majority of domains that are sold in China are to businesses, not to enthusiasts. And businesses don't go to their registrar's website and use the spinning tool and buy the domain names and check out online. Rather, sales representatives in the registrars are on a daily basis reaching out via telephone, via email, via WeChat, via door-to-door sales, and executing their sales that way. The final piece of advice, and there's a number of key pieces of advice for registry operators looking at China. For those that aren't yet in China but are considering China, I would encourage you to secure your premium namespace as quickly as possible. Be amazed how well connected the Chinese domain name investment community is. Worldwide trends. There's a pretty good level of English language comprehension. And vast numbers of domains are sold to Chinese registrants for investment purposes, for trading purposes, from Western registrars. So everyone here on the panel today, I'm sure would agree, has plenty of Chinese business coming out of the mainland. Now, those domains aren't resolving to websites, but they're being held for speculation purposes. So for registries, you really do need to secure your Chinese language premium name list. Otherwise, you'll lose it at general availability prices rather than premium prices.
It's a unique opportunity and a unique challenge. I mean, just the things that you're talking about here, the methods of distribution. I mean, for most people in the room, you know, door-to-door sales of domain names. I mean, it's just a different world.
Tony, there are registrars in second and third tier cities of China that my colleagues and I visit on a monthly basis. Have upwards of 40,000 resellers, networks of 40,000 resellers, and 2,000 to 5,000 telesales executives sitting on 6 to 8 floors of a building. This is second, third tier city operations. Labor is relatively cheap not in Beijing, not in Shanghai, but in the second, third tier cities, labor's pretty cheap. So it's not expensive to put people on a phone.
Yeah, it's amazing. Not quite the same at web.com, mind you. Give us some insight about some co-marketing stuff, Drake. I mean, we've got, you know, folks coming to you with crazy ideas. You've got your own plans of what you want to do. Tell us what's working and what's not working for you.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of challenges that we've got boiled down into two things. One, which was, I'll echo what was said before, is we really appreciate the fact that everybody brings a lot of interesting ideas to us, but a lot of times, especially when it requires storefront builds and tech deployment. You know, unfortunately, we're not a nimble ship. You know, it requires, you know, 6 to 8 for us to really get our arms around a program and a program that's got a life cycle of, say, 4 to 6 weeks. It just isn't matter how interested we are in it. So, you know, long conversation. It's a long conversation with us. The problem that I think that we've got right now is engagement. And, you know, it really gets back to the relevancy topics that were brought up earlier and a lot of the other pieces about how to get people engaged in using this. But my definition of engagement is, does my mother understand when she sees a domain name or a URL that has an ELD in it, that when she types it into her phone or her tablet or whatever, it's going to work? And, you know, I personally feel right now, by and large, the answers. And, you know, I know that that's probably not a very popular opinion in this room, but, you know, I can personally say that outside of getting forwarded from many people in this room, examples of deployed websites, you know, obviously being in the space, we're interested in what our customers deployed and things like that. I have, honest to God, never sat down at my computer, typed in a website on a new GTLD, period. I've just never found a commercial property that I've said, hey, outside of a discussion, this is what I want to use. And I think that that's a problem. Until you see it on the side of a truck, until you see it on a large billboard, you know, it's back to the relevancy discussion. I think that we're going to have a problem as an industry really getting people to understand that these things are real. And real, in my mind, isn't just convincing them from a brand perspective. You know, we're at the fundamental level of when I type this in my browser, it will function. So, you know, that's the one piece I think that we have to figure out how to do. I do have a suggestion on how we do that, and I think that suggestion is, as you guys are looking at these, as you're looking at going after it, you got to find anchor tenants. I think that is a very, very important piece, and I think friends at Club have done a fantastic job of that, you know, being able to kind of come out and say, hey, these are popular sites. I know a number of other registries have done the same thing. You know, I think it's important that you guys can come to us and help us as registrars have the ability to point and say, this is in use. This works, and this is something that people can see. So that's the one piece that I think we're having a problem with the marketing programs grabbing onto. So it's not an issue of, you know, co-marketing funds. It's not an issue of how the program runs beyond what I just talked through. More of the how do we message this and get over that fundamental hurdle of, if I pay the money for this,
got to be able to see it and feel it before I'm really seeing the full value.
Yeah.
And I think most people in the room, I'm sure, agree that a lot of that resides in brand space. You know, when I can see run.nike or
yeah,
whatever it happens to be. You know, that will be that extra thing that hits the pop culture and sort of popular life and mainstream advertising,
yeah,
in ways that we've never done before.
I agree.
Tommy, if I'm more of a niche DLD, what's GoDaddy's advice for me on how to build that up a little bit? I mean, we all know that there are a number of TLD operators now that have got smaller volumes. You know, the cost of operations, registry and marketing otherwise is extensive. From your perspective, any advice on how to, you know, get those guys to lift their businesses?
You know, I think what Drake just mentioned about anchor tenants is a good point. certainly the more that the registries can do to that community involved to get support from, you know, from that niche community, it's going to help out a lot. I think what we've seen with some of the smaller registries and their sort of guerrilla style marketing campaigns, I think some of that has worked, especially, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, just recently .ski launched with their TLD, and they've done a lot of work in getting support from not just the hospitality industry, but also the national associations. So certainly that's going to help. You know, I think when at the end of the day, when we think about niche TLDs, you know, I think they're going to remain specialized. That's ultimately the value proposition, and to kind of leave that to leave that charter, it's you know, in the long term, it's going to hurt them. I think they have to remain specialized in order to kind of maintain that value proposition.
Cool. Nick, so from your perspective, name.com, what's co-marketing for you? Working, what's not? And I guess I'll add an extra element to that, which is, how much runway do you want before you're executing? You know, how early do I need to come to you with a program, engage with you, agree with it, or you can execute?
So on the time before launch, the longer the better. The more successful your, the more lead time you give us, the more successful your program is going to be. Don't think that there's a set amount of time. I think that the key to any promotional activity or marketing activity or whatever you want to call it is that if it's not tailored for your TLD, it's gonna fail. And if you're a portfolio holder of TLDs, you have more than one TLD, it's got to be different for your TLDs. There's definitely a recognition that some of the TLDs are more niche. So some of the activities that work for more generic TLDs or TLDs that are a little bit more broad shouldn't be in more niche proposals, right? We just can't do it. We can't help you there. That being said, there are so many ways that we can work with you guys to find your market, to define your market, and to really execute on it. So breaking that down, I think that we really like to see proposals where you guys come to us and you're like, Here's the market that we're going for in this specific campaign, right? Here's what we're going to do. We're going to drive new business this way. We need you guys to do this to your customers, and specifically these customers. The smarter you get with kind of breaking down exactly who you're going for and how you're going to do it is really going to lead to your ultimate success. If you continue to, or if you really want to go super broad, expect that to be less effective, right? So the key is to define and find and ultimately convert your target market.
I'm going to come back to you in a sec, Matt. I'm going to ask that same question to Simon, because we talked about a very different... Don't be upset. Because we're talking about
Not too much co-marketing then, Matt.
But you did admit there was no co-marketing.
Look, I'm pretty sure that every non-Chinese registry operator that we've ever worked with would agree that in China, it's impossible to get volume sales without co-marketing. So simply posting inventory or posting banner ads on retail websites doesn't convert to sales. The thing I'd say, and look, designing co-marketing programs for China, there are similarities with the West. You know, you need to have, you know, relevant graphics and relevant concepts. A successful tactic that we assisted many of our registry clients with over the years has been to tie specific promotions to Chinese traditional holidays and different elements throughout the Chinese year. Keep in mind that the Chinese year operates in a very different way than the Western year. There's no Christmas period, for example, but there are very significant vacation periods through the year. The overall requirement for a co-marketing program to work is that there's enough profit in the co-marketing program for the chain of resellers, which will lead from the registrar, from your registrar partner, the eventual reseller. And that chain may go six generations, because China is a vast country, 5 billion people, and there are businesses. There are, I actually don't know how many businesses there are in China, Tony, but there are vast, vast entrepreneurial powers and trends in China. So there are startup businesses in every corner of China, and that first or second or third time startup, you know, he or she has an existing relationship with someone who's been supplying her domain names for years. So, and that's a reseller of a reseller of a reseller of a reseller of a registrar. And everyone in that chain needs to have a little bit of profit on the way through. So when a Chinese reseller, I'm sorry, when a Chinese registrar asks you to give you more financial contribution to the co-marketing program, it's not necessarily because they're greedy. It's because there are many mouths.
And I'm going to ask Matt the question, but please feel free if you're here today to ask a question. There's one from the chat room. Thank you.
This is Ozan Shahin from iCampus Development Support Department, managing the remote participation today. We have two questions in the chat box that came from John McCormack from hosterstats.com. The first one is, with 1 year renewal rates falling to around 54% on some of the main GTLDs, have registry promotions and discounting become more important in driving new registration volume? What are the renewal rates on freebie registrations like, and do they influence a registrar to add that TLDs to his TLD list? Second one is, there seems to be some Chinese speculation in .com with numerics and 4L registrations. Is this a bubble or real growth?
You want to take the first one? I mean, I think we're talking here about the spread of renewal rates. Drake, I might pass that to you.
Sure, absolutely.
I think I'll reframe that a little bit just to make sure that I'm addressing the point. From a registry perspective, do we as an operator, think that freemium register or free registrations are good to drive long-term renewals? I think question. I think from our perspective, it's challenging. I think we certainly drive numbers based on free registrations. I mean, free anything tends to get volume. The problem with that, from our perspective, is one, we don't necessarily believe it drives engagement. And if you're not driving usage, we don't believe it's going to drive renewal. So from our perspective, while it may help in the short run with things like domains under management, it may help in the short run with on the registry side with management or domain registrations, we don't think it's creating a good long-term viable stream of customers using TLDs. I also kind of echo back to my previous point, it certainly doesn't drive usage. So one of the things that we've seen is that from an engagement perspective, when we do programs, and we certainly test them, with giving away free registrations in a variety of methods, everything from couponing to, you know, name your solution on this, it really doesn't create anything other than first-year non-renewals for us. So it's just not a very exciting piece of program. I think that if you start talking about that context, back to my original comment around bundling, if you start to talk about it in programs like that, I think that isn't so much a free registration. That is an economic incentive for us to drive marketing around a specific TLD within a bundle. That's not the same thing in my mind. So
Matt, back to you. The trends within the corporate side, right, in terms of what is driving your client register, and then as a second element to the question, if it's happening, what may or does drive them to use?
Well, what drives them to register usually is fear. To be perfectly honest, right? I mean, it's a lot of CYA. So, you know, the thought that someone else registers, you know, their main brand name dot whatever TLD, you know, has implications. So, you know, am I going to put my job on the line by choosing not to register a $50 domain name? Probably not. You know, is that risk going to be less if it's, you know, a TLD that has no direct connection to my company and things like that? Sure. So that's probably what drives people to register. What drives them to use is going to be what their competitors are doing, quite frankly. So if I'm in the hospitality business and, you know, I see a competitor start using .city names, for example, you know, my VP of marketing is probably going to come tap me on the shoulder and ask me why we're not doing the same thing, right? So, you know, again, corporations, especially, you know, we're talking large multinational corporations, generally are slow to respond, right? I mean, you were talking about web.com being a, you know, big ship to steer. Well, you know, these guys have the same thing, and they've got to prioritize, and they've got limited resources and all that stuff. So it's really all about, you know, and some companies just naturally are more innovative and want to be more kind of future looking and be on the forefront of things. And then there's everyone else that kind of sits back and watches what those first movers are doing. And it's the same thing with the dot brands, quite frankly. You know, I mean, a lot of the dot brands that that we manage are starting to do some things slowly, but, you know, a lot of them are also waiting to see what some of the larger, you know, technology and companies like that are doing as well.
Thanks. I'm going to, before I go to throw to you, Rich, I just want to probe a little deeper on that, Matt. So is it, Could you give any context as to, for example, segments of either pricing or types of TLDs that resonate better, or, for example, around the city TLD space, you know, your dot Berlins, dot Londons? Yeah. Are there any things that are working better than, generally speaking, than others? I mean, I think most people understand that Nike will register Nike.sport defensively because they feel like that's what they need to do. I think that's kind of clear. But are there other trends, other segments that are starting to become more accepted by the corporate community?
I don't know about accepted, but definitely the geographical and the city TLDs, we're definitely seeing a lot of interest there. And yeah, you know, just to reiterate, Tony, what you said, I mean, our guidance to our clients for the past 2 years is to register where there's a strong delta between your brands, your products, and the TLD, right? So if you're a sporting goods company, something like, you know, .sport, .apparel, things like that make sense. You know, hospitality, the hospitality TLD. So definitely kind of looking at those verticalized TLDs where it's a connection to your company. But then also on the city TLDs, if your company is headquartered in New York City or in Berlin or wherever the case is. So definitely where there's a, you know, people are looking to register where there's a strong connection. And what they'll do is if the pricing is really high, generally they're going to be less interested in defensive registrations because obviously the likelihood that, you know, speculators are going to go out is less. So.
Makes sense. Question from the room, Rich Murdinger.
Hi, Rich Murdinger with GoDaddy. Question in general for the panel. We have all these new products that we've added to our catalogs, excuse me. They don't all behave the same. We now have longer extensions. We have IDNs at the SLD as well as the TLD. What are you doing within your individual verticals to help make sure the products that you're bringing to market are actually going to function properly?
Sorry, Rich, function properly, like?
So that when you go to a browser and enter in a new extension, it actually works, or you go to a bakery to sign up for their promotional program using your new email address, they accept it.
Universal accept. So I think, you know, universal acceptance is something that all of us should be interested in, you know, myself, our clients. And there's a, you know, there's any number of efforts underway. We're really just trying to get people to get involved and engaged in those efforts, both here at ICANN and outside of ICANN. You know, certainly with our clients, I mean, a lot of them are large technology companies that, you know, run a lot of the backbone services. So if they're showing up and participating in ICANN and are aware that that stuff is an issue, I think that helps them when they go back to their companies, you know, make sure that people understand that this is an issue that, you know, that they need to account for and work on as they develop new products and, you know, make sure that new TLDs are accounted for when they do that.
So let's move to another topic. It's always going to be interesting when you get sort of 12 to 18 months in. Let's talk about renewals, Tommy. Sort of the spread are you seeing in terms of renewal rates? And are there any trends, again, you know, particular types of verticals, particular pricing models, things that are renewing with greater levels of, you know, of percentage of success?
Certainly the TLDs, you know, that we saw launch, the GOs, for example, we're seeing better renewal rates from those. You know, I think with renewal rates, it's a challenge because being able to pick up on those domains that are, you know, that are most unlikely to renew and targeting those, you know, whether it's by looking at the shopper and looking at, you know, how many domains they have in their portfolio, for example. They're, you know, splitting out the customer segments and doing some analysis on that. It's a real challenge kind of figuring out which domains have or which shoppers have the most propensity to renew versus those that don't, so that we can target that latter kind of customer segment to do more with them, whether it's working with the registry or you know, or something like that to really promote them, do some extra messaging, for example. You know, I think in general it's difficult. I don't know the exact figures around which you know, which TLDs are, you know, are renewing better than others, but certainly when we look at the spread, looking at the customer segment provides the most insight.
And Nick, same sort of question. Trends from your perspective, and I guess what are you doing to drive renewals, and what are you also hoping that your, you know, registries are doing to help you to drive those renewals?
So I think to push back a little bit, price is definitely a factor that affects renewals. Like that's no surprise. But it's really how we drove the units that's going to affect renewals a lot more. So it's going to be what kind of campaign was driving the initial registration, right? Is that a campaign that was targeted at someone who already uses and understands domains? Is that targeted at investors? Is that targeted at first-time customers, right? And I think those renewal rates are those kind of factors play into renewal rates way more than I think
we really understand and really can get a good grasp of, especially at a registrar level, right? So I think the other kind of component on this one that's a little bit hard for a lot of registrars, right, when you're talking about driving renewal rates, is that frankly a lot of TLDs don't have that many units at a, like, at a single registrar. So the variance is sometimes misleading, right? So you might see 100% renewal rate or a 0% renewal rate, but really is that an indicator of a TLD's health? Probably not. That's an indicator of an individual program that either really succeeded or really failed. So again, like I can't stress it enough, but the real key for everyone in this room is to get people to actually register domains, right? That's a small hurdle compared to actually getting people to use them. And as soon as we get people to use domains and make it unbelievably easy to use domains, right, so that it becomes easier to actually enable the domain than it is to leave it, like, your idea parked and not doing anything, or, you know, not resolving and not doing anything. As soon as it becomes easier to actually do something with your domain than that kind of default activity, then that's really going to change it. And a lot of that onus is on registrars, right, in this room and not in this room. But really, you know, we're looking to you guys too, right? So some TLDs come to us and say, look, we see that X percent of our users are really using this for a Tumblr site. Or we see redirects being huge in our space, right? And we want to drive a campaign around that. Like, those are probably the most interesting and successful campaigns that we'll see at a retail level.
Matt, from the corporate side, the trends in renewals, where are they dropping them? Where are they keeping them?
Yeah, well, you know, this is where registries love us, because our renewal rates are, you know, 95%. So you're welcome. Certainly for us, I think for our clients, it's too early to let domains, you know, new TLDs go. You know, historically, our, you know, corporate renewal rates are far, far higher than retail renewal rates. We're seeing the same kind of behavior again. I don't think people are looking at it yet with a critical eye, right? It's been too early for them to go through their new TLD portfolio and kind of pair things back. Actually, probably where our renewal rates are taking a hit is on the legacy GTLDs. Because as people are registering new GTLDs, part of the way they're coming up with the budget for that is by cutting their existing portfolio, frankly, just because there's more there to cut. And so I think our renewal rates, on new GTLDs are, you know, probably even close to 100%, frankly.
And for those that, I mean, there's a small number, but for those that have got their own .dot brand, do you think that as they start to use that, a lot of that legacy portfolio is going to rationalize?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's too early to tell. I don't think, anyone's letting their, you know, main.com or even their country code sites go. But what they're looking at is their, you know, they've acquired, whether through acquisition or through failed product launches or campaigns that have just, you know, run their course, they're starting to take a look at their, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 domain names and pare back, again, to make room not only for new GTLDs, but also for their dot brands. I think over time, it has the potential to impact, existing TLD portfolios, both legacy TLDs, new GTLDs, and CCTLDs. But I think we're 5 to 10 years away from that, estimation.
For those in the audience, please, a quick reminder, you're welcome to raise your hand if you'd like a question. In the meantime, if I'm doing door-to-door sales for domain names, talk to me about renewals now. What do registries have to do to assist in that completely different model?
Look, renewals are fascinating in China, and just like you say, Matt, it's too early to tell in China, because the new G program is so new, and typically a domain sold in China will be sold for a multi-year registration. So it's absolutely typical for a normal registrant, a business registrant, an SME or a major corporate, to purchase 5 years or 10 years. Culturally, it's quite culturally appropriate to show one's financial resources. So why wouldn't you purchase 10 years, excuse me, off term in the first year? And as far as the resellers of the resellers of the resellers are concerned, they don't want to have to chase down their sales book of registrations on a 12-monthly basis. So they have they have great interest in ensuring multi-year registrations up to 10 years. We have literally had registrars in China ask us if we could please kindly ask our registry operators if 10,000-year registrations are possible, please. That's absolutely true. Because that would be, the 10,000 is the largest number that can be represented with a single Chinese character.
Hopefully we've started the second round by then, Simon.
Yeah. So multi-year is de rigueur, and I think we'll see the actual Chinese renewal interest at around the 5-year mark. And I think we're about a year and a half in now.
Completely different environment, isn't it? Yeah. Interesting. All right, guys, we've got about 10 minutes to go. Again, a sort of... Oh, hello, question. Thank you.
Ozan Shahin, ICANN staff. This time we have a comment in the chat box that came again from John McCormack, hosterstats.com. The comment is, it is possible to predict which domain names will be renewed, but it requires continual TLD monitoring and web usage analysis, among other things.
Thank you. So let's take a little bit of crystal ball work here, right? We've got about 10 minutes to go. Trends going to happen in the future, the relevance of domain names. I mean, obviously, the Domain Name Association is heavily involved in protecting the industry and protecting the value of domains in our ecosystem, in the digital ecosystem. You know, when we've all heard everything, you know, domains are dead, it's all about apps. I'm not sure, you know, whether that's true or not, but I'm interested in your guys' perspective of what's going to happen in 5 years, Drake?
Well, I can say that we certainly don't believe that. From our perspective, and I think it's an echo of a lot of comments that have been made today already, you know, we believe that there's a lot of new and creative uses. We believe that the concept of name scarcity is effectively gone at this point, and I think that that opens up a lot of new and creative uses. So, you know, stepping past some of the engagement problems and things that I think we need to work on to help people understand, and I think comments that were made earlier about making it easier for people to use things, you know, one click and kind of removing some of the techie kind of things like DNS from the language. In our storefronts, I think we're ripe to really grow this. I mean, you know, from my perspective, if my mom can go online and you know, literally purchase a product that makes her Facebook page with a domain name and she doesn't have to understand what I just said, you know, that's it, right? I mean, why not? Why wouldn't she? And, you know, if we can do a good job as a channel and as an industry to make that successful and easy and simple, and as retailers, if we can do a good job of delivering that product to the consumer, you know, I think that this is good. This is going to move forward in a very aggressive fashion.
So that's an interesting point about simplicity, right, about the purchase process. I mean, we're so used to it. You know, in this game, in this room, and, of course, this building, we're used to that process. But ultimately, it's a very, you know, unnecessarily, some would argue, complex process to acquire. From GoDaddy's perspective, what are you doing to simplify that process?
I think the more that we can do to help our customers actually use the domains, where, you know, one thing that we've recently rolled out is a concept called personal domains, whereby our customers can simply and easily point their domain names to their social presence, whether it's a Facebook page or their Twitter or their LinkedIn account. It's a very simple process. It's a very simple idea for those of us in the room across registries and registrars. It's simply domain forwarding, but we've built a very simple UI, and we've managed to enable customers to point, whether it's their new GTLD or their CCTLD or a legacy, you know, GTLD to their social site. And it just makes it that much easier, you know, for the entrepreneurs, for the startups, for the SMEs that might already have a page, their Facebook page, to enable that usage. So that's something that we're pursuing very aggressively. You know, I think what was mentioned before about universal acceptance for the next few years, I think if we can get, you know, with the help across registries and registrars and ICANN as well, you know, push that agenda forward, you know, that combined with, you know, some uptick in brand usage, usage by dot brands, I should say, you know, I think you'll, over the next few years, I think you'll see more success within the program.
So, Nick, I'll ask you a similar question. You've talked before about having multiple domain names. You know, it's not just about your single property. You've got these new options now. How are you driving that? What's the future look like for you guys?
I mean, the future is uncertain, right? I think the future is got to be tested, right? We have to kind of keep refining and fixing and testing and trying new things. A key to this industry is going to be in innovation. Right, so I think that if you're basing your model off of an existing TLD, no matter how big, or if we're building our model against an existing registrar, no matter how big, you know, that's ultimately self-defeating. The conversation isn't new TLDs versus COM or one registrar versus another. The conversation is really us versus I don't want to say the rest of the world, but more or less, that's what it is, right? It's against that conception that you don't really need a domain name, that your online presence is your Facebook page and or your LinkedIn or your Twitter, and they can all be separate things, and you don't need any kind of direction there, right? Like, you should, it's like the idea that you don't need to go and actually have a single way for someone to get there without going using those internal search engines. Like, that is, that's kind of like where the conversation has to shift to. It has to shift to growing the market outside of the space that we're already in, as opposed to competing for our existing customers. As soon as we do that, you know, I think that there is definitely room to grow. But if we keep this conversation on the train of competing for the existing marketplace or just kind of growing at this steady 6% or whatever, that really opens it up for apps. That opens it up for alternatives that we can't see yet. So the more aggressive and innovative that we can possibly get through testing, through trying new things, through failing many, many times and eventually succeeding is really the key forward.
Makes sense. Matt, the future for corporates, you know, in particular, I guess, speaking about the domain and the portfolio and as, you know, as they adjust and modify that, where do you see it heading in, you know, 5 to 10 years?
Well, thanks for asking me to not talk about a 10,000-year future because I can't really comprehend that. You know, I think it's definitely an exciting, interesting time in the corporate space as well. You know, I think, you know, just in talking to our existing clients that applied for .brands, I think some of them are going to do some really cool, innovative things. And then I think what will be interesting is that next round of TLDs. You know, we've already had clients that, you know, want to apply for a TLD today. And so I agree with Tony's point about, you know, a lot of this industry is going to be driven by what some of the large brand holders in the world start to do and start to communicate to their clients, because then it's going to make it, you know, that much easier and that much, you know, more robust of an ecosystem for all of the TLD operators when consumers start getting used to typing in things like, you know, .Barclays or .HSBC. And so I think over time, you know, and 5 to 10 years, I think that's going to kind of become the norm.
Talked about the future. I mean, with the exception of your 10,000-year registration, what's the future?
Well, in 10,000 years, we predict that domain names will probably still be thriving. no, I'd address John McCormack's comment earlier, his question about the Chinese bubble in speculation for .coms, for valuable.coms. I would predict that in 5 years and 10 years, there will still not be a bubble in valuable.coms because the inventory of 3L3N.com is not getting any larger, and it will only become a more and more acceptable commodity. Keep in mind that Chinese citizens, it's extremely difficult for them, and in many cases illegal for them to invest in offshore investments. And the Chinese stock market is a mess. Chinese property sector is a mess. This is why Bitcoin, paper gold, rare and collectible wine, art, even stamps are tradable commodities with tradable commodity prices. So a short .com domain name, the people that are trading these things now, they're not necessarily domainers. They're mums and pops and aunties. So 5 to 10 years, you will still see that there's no bubble because this is a rare, valuable, tradable commodity with a market rate. The other prediction I make in 5 or 10 years, Tony, is that I'd say in 5 years, we've got a 50-50 chance that IDNs is Chinese.Chinese or Chinese.ASCII. I think in 5 years, we've got a 50-50 chance working, and possibly by then indexed by China's search. And by 10 years, I think we've got 100% chance that IDN.IDN and IDN.ASCII will
be a really interesting dynamic, and I'm really glad that you were able to join the panel today. Folks, this is the sort of thing... Sorry, I've got a question. Feel free to come to the mic. Would you like this?
Hi, I'm Rex Wickham from Imperial Registrations, small registrar. Just wondered what the panel thought about the premium market or the way registries operate premium names. Because for ourselves, we find that probably the most challenging parts of bringing domains into the health space. It's all the changes and the way they operate.
Yeah, I'd agree. Premium names, certainly from a brand holder perspective, have certainly been challenging trying to navigate, you know, what names are premium and for a lot of our clients, why they're premium, which is also very interesting. I think when you look at the potential that some of those names will change upon renewal, I think that's one thing to keep an eye out. You know, as we hit the renewal cycles going forward, there's a real concern that pricing is going to change, right? And so that's definitely something that concerns us and our clients.
Anyone else want to sort of comment on that?
Yeah, I think obviously as a retail registrar, there's challenges there, right? We had to rework our search page to show renewal rates. We had to figure out way too many implementations of really the same concept. So it's definitely challenging. That being said, there's a definite upside there. And I think that number of premiums sold as long as you can display them correctly, right? And that's in and of itself is a challenge, especially when a $2,000 domain is next to a $10 domain. That's probably not the best way to display it. And I think the registrar channel needs to get a little more sophisticated there, but certainly that there's an opportunity to sell them there. And as long as we can get past these kind of initial growing pains or headaches, I think there's potential there. But certainly a lot of headaches in the past 2 years and till now.
So, guys, I think we're just about out of time. Two very quick plugs. The DNA University, this is the sort of thing that you'll be hearing in the sense of a university designed to be educational. And we're going to continue to roll out new concept, new speakers, new innovations, and bring these to the market. You don't need to be a member to listen, but we'd certainly love to have you as a member of the DNA. If you haven't done so already, please visit thedna.org and have a look there. Memberships are available. It is open for registrars. And this is the industry body that is designed to help you with your businesses. So if you join me in thanking our panellists, and thank you for joining us.
DNA's most recent magazine, State of the Domains. Please come by and pick we'll pop in to see our friends and neighbours.
Hey. How's it going?
Good, Monica. Hurry up.
Good, very well.
Excellent.
Very well.